Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Last weekend of February, Tim. Or August. Last weekend of August. Flew right by, didn't it? Why am I thinking about February? I don't know. But thanks for joining us. I appreciate everybody being here. It's been a while. These interviews, we kind of bounce in and out, Tim. So I haven't even seen you in a little bit.
Yeah, we've done so many interviews, and even Gensel from the other day was recorded last week. So you and I haven't chatted one-on-one in like 2 weeks. So it feels good to get back into this, a regular quote-unquote episode.
I know, and we text every day. So it's not like we don't talk. And I often call Tim just on the phone and say, I don't understand what's going on, Tim. Can you walk me through this? Because I'm very not tech-savvy, and Tim's just a savant when it comes to that stuff. So we were just wrapping up a new partnership with somebody else. Just a tester. You guys will find out in a couple of weeks, but I had no clue how to, you know, even work a Word document. So Tim helps me out a lot. But anyways, good seeing you. How's life? How's the wife and kids? Everybody good?
Everything's good. I have to go to the DMV today, which is not
fun.
Ooh,
changing your last name?
No, just like a registration thing from being from an out of towner. So that'll be annoying, and I feel like it's throwing off my entire day, but I'm going to at like 2 in the afternoon, so hopefully it'll be pretty slow, or slow as they get anyway, so yeah.
Go ahead. No.
Well, I put in a dashboard camera in a couple of months ago in my car. Mm-hmm. That's basically recording every time the car is on. Just because I see all these videos of like near accidents and misses and people doing like insurance scams and stuff. So I wanted to put that on. It's been fun. It's interesting to know that I'm driving fine. I see all these incidents and I'm like, anything happens, I'll be protected. I'll have the proof. So yeah, I had one a few
back
weeks
and
ago
front.
Was, sorry?
Back and front cam?
Well, I got both, but the back one's hard to install because my door is like a hatchback. Mm. And so like it needs to go up the top of the window and then it would just get stretched by the wire. So I haven't figured that out, but just the front. I had a near miss like 2 weeks ago where this woman cut in front of me taking a left across when I was going straight and it wasn't her right away. So I showed the video to Julia and I was like, hey, look at this. And I made a joke like, oh, of course it was a woman. Ha ha. And she, you know, she didn't like that. She's like, that's not true. Like, I've had a couple of near misses in the last couple of years, and they've all been with men drivers. And I was like, well, in those scenarios, you were
at fault. There's like really good Norm MacDonald jokes on when he used to be on SNL that are absolutely hilarious. And it's about women's drivers. Like, and he has like a pie graph. And he's like, for those of you adding it up, this does not add up to 100% because a woman did the math. And then it's just really funny. But anyways, I have an update on the chickens. We get a lot of people who are interested in them. And just brace yourself because it's not good.
Oh, no.
Last week, or it is a week and a half ago now, I was leaving and the kids were already gone. They were out the door early with my wife. And I left and I looked over and the chickens, you know, we let them out, I say, every 3 days, 4 days to free range just to get some exercise, you know, get the legs going, entertain them a little bit. So I saw them and they looked a little sad. So I'm like, I'm going to let them out today. I let them out. I came back from work, I think around 1 o'clock. It was a quick day. And so I pull into the driveway. I come in the house and my wife's like, yeah, the chickens were really upset. I heard them really squawking, but I couldn't go out there because I was dealing with Marie. And so I look out the window. And there's a big pile of feathers in the backyard. I'm like, oh, that's not good. And then I look in out the other back window, another big pile of feathers. I'm like, whoa, not good. So I go outside and I couldn't find any chickens. And I'm walking up the driveway and I see a fox staring at me. I'm like, you son of a gun. And so I start walking towards the fox and he doesn't budge. And usually foxes are skittish. They'll see somebody and they won't, like, you won't even see them because they'll get going before you even see them. But he wasn't moving. So he was on to something where I was, and he wanted to get going towards me. And so I had to bluff charge him, and he ran. But then I immediately went into salvation mode. Like, where are my chickens? I have to find them. So I started looking everywhere. I found two, and they looked really distressed. And so I immediately put them back into the coop, and I started looking everywhere. And I could not find the other chickens. And we had eight, had is the operative word. So I'm walking all through the woods, like everywhere, stressing out. I'm like, I let these chickens out. I'm the one who dropped the ball here. Because usually when we let them out, I made the mistake. The kids are around. They're playing. So they're scaring off all the animals that would attack them, whether it's cats or foxes or coyotes or whatever. I let them out unprotected. So finally, two more come back. The two we had originally from like a year and a half ago, the OGs, they found their way back. They know how to survive. They're survivors. We lost four.
Four?
Half of them gone. So we don't know. The fox got them 100% because I found another pile of feathers further away, like 2 miles, 2 acres away from where the attack happened. So I think the fox just killed all four, dragged them somewhere, and just had himself a feast. So, yeah, it wasn't a good day. So this was like a week and a half. No body count. So no bodies. But it's been a week now and they haven't come back. And the four that died were the new ones that we got. And they weren't the brightest. You know, they like if you went to pick them up, it was good for the kids. They would just freeze. They wouldn't run. The old ones were impossible to pick up. They would sprint. They would be gone. And they were a hassle to corral. These new ones were good because you could just walk towards them and they would just crunch down to the ground. You'd pick them right up. So I think the fox just scared them and they just, Bob's your uncle, you know, dead. So,
are the kids upset?
Oddly enough, no. I feel like they've been desensitized to the chicken deaths. And so they just, it's a matter of fact. It's a way of life. I said, I'm sorry, you guys. I made a mistake. I left them out. And they died. So now we're down to four. So we're going to have to re-up next year, which is fine. Four for the winter. We can handle that. They have the big, big, big brand new coop to live in. But yeah, it was my fault. I felt bad. It was not a good way to end the summer with the four chicken deaths. But what are you going to do, right?
Yeah, it's going to hurt the egg production too. So
I know, and I've been
less protein in the house.
Six, seven, probably six egg omelets I've been making over easies. They're delicious. Oh my gosh, doesn't get any better. Doesn't get any better. You know what else doesn't get any better, Tim? Interview recaps. We had two high end interviews, and the people seemed to really enjoy them. What were your thoughts on Adam Fantilli and Jake Gensel, two superstars in the league?
Yeah, Fantilli was awesome. He was very, like, you know, I don't know why I get surprised sometimes, but he's so, like, smart, well-spoken, honest, funny, like all the things you'd want in a young player that will probably be a captain of his team someday. I thought it was great. I think he was great and you know, generous with answering like line A questions, for example.
Yeah.
And some people gave us a hard time for that. Like, why are you putting a 19-year-old on the spot? It's like, if you listen to the interview, you definitely didn't put him on the spot. You gave him multiple outs. Like, you don't have to answer this, but like the trade happened the day before the interview. We're not going to not at least bring it up and give him a chance. And if he didn't want to answer, he didn't have to. And he spoke for like a couple of minutes about it. So that was totally on him. So I think it was great.
Imagine if we don't ask about it, the amount of people saying, I can't believe you didn't ask about the Lion A trade. And for people who don't know, and we probably don't say this, before every interview, I preface every interview. I say, hey, guys, if there's something you don't want to talk about, let me know now. And we won't bring it up. We won't broach that topic. And he said, no, I'm a fair game. Some guys, I don't want to talk about this or that trade or this incident that happened with that player. And so I respect what the players do and don't want to talk about, but for the most part, they're pretty open books. And Adam, right away, he said, I know what you're going to ask about the Lion A, and I get it. And he started laughing. I'm like, yeah, it just happened. So is it okay? And he was perfectly fine with it. Then he handled it well. 19 years old. When I was 19, I couldn't imagine going on a podcast and talking about stuff that's going to get picked up in articles. I couldn't even tie my shoes. Like, it was, he's so well spoken. So that was a good one.
Yeah, and Gensel was great too. I think one of the comments was like, oh, this is boring. I stopped listening 5 minutes in, but I went back and watched, and you do see him like open up more over the course of the interview. Where in the beginning, it's a little bit of that like cookie cutter stuff, and then he starts to, I don't know, just relax a little bit more. And I thought he was great too. And you could tell he was also, you know, generous with his time. He was reluctant to do it. It's not really his thing, not a huge personality, but. I thought he was great. And some of the stuff with the trades, you know, three teams in under, you know, 12 months. Now, there's plenty to talk about. So I thought that was great.
No, I thought he was fine. He's got like the amount of baggage that he could just start slinging in mud. You know what I mean? From going from Pittsburgh, not re-signing with them, even though Crosby was probably just screaming at Dubas to re-sign him. And when you have the best player potentially ever yelling at the GM, please re-sign this guy. And he's like verbally and outwardly upset that he doesn't resign, going to Carolina, all that situation happening there, the team that's underperformed for years and years and years, and he was supposed to be the missing link, and it doesn't happen. They only win one round and lose in the second round, and then taking Steven Stamkos' spot in Tampa Bay. Like, that's, he's had a pretty wild ride the last year and a half, even 6 months. Like, it's amazing to go from Pittsburgh, what am I going to do? I want to stay. Oh, I go to Carolina. Let's try to win a Stanley Cup. That didn't work out. Oh, free agency. Let's see how this works. He doesn't even become a UFA. He gets signed by one of the dangerous teams in the world to replace one of the best goal scorers of our generation, Steven Stamkos. So it's pretty neat. And he's so humble. I didn't realize he made $9 million. Nine. When we started doing the research for the show, I was like, oof, nine, that's a lot of money. But anyway, speaking of money, this episode is brought to you by Bet365, proud partner of Dropping the Gloves. Open an account today with Bet365, and you can bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Use code HOCKEYCA. That's Bet365, code HOCKEYCA. Speaking of money, wawa weewa, I am becoming a modern-day prophet. We have Boston Bruins insiders on here. We have hockey gurus. Everybody knows everything about hockey. Oh, Jeremy Swayman, the number's going to start with an 8. For sure. There's no way he's going to ask for more. He's going to do a team-friendly deal. They're going to get this wrapped up. Wah, wah, wee, wah. Lo and behold, it sounds like Jeremy Swayman will be a holdout based on his latest interview he did with, who did he do an interview with? Some other show, like a radio show. He is playing hardball, Tim. He's not messing around. And this all circles back to how the Boston Bruins treated him a year ago when they took him to arbitration. And he left with a very, very, very sour taste in his mouth after that experience. And he is wise to the game now. He is not this innocent young kid who just is happy to be in the NHL. He knows his worth. He's not playing games, and he knows how big this moment is for him and his career and his family's career moving forward. So, Tim, what happened with your Boston Bruins? Break it down for us.
First, the report came out last weekend that from Rich Keefe of 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston, which is the same station as a friend of the show, Ty Anderson, from last week. And Rich said that Swayman's reported asking price was $10 million. Now, Rich is like, you know, he's a Boston radio personality, but he's not an insider. He's not one to typically break news. And I don't want to disrespect him, but basically all these other reports from sources that I consider more reliable said, hey, this isn't true. But where there's smoke, there's sometimes fire. So maybe he came in with 10 originally. Maybe he wants minimum 9, whatever that's going to be. A lot of conflicting reports. And then Swayman went on that radio show you mentioned with Mark Lewis, who's not someone I know, but I think it's a Boston-based podcast or something, at a charity event. And Swayman was asked about it, and he was very honest. So the guy said, basically, what's it like going through what you're going through with the negotiation, you know, the pressure, the rumors? And Swayman said, quote, if you were to ask me the same question a year ago, I would answer truthfully. And I would say it's scary. It's a lot of resentment toward people that want you to succeed. And when you're not being compensated for your endless efforts and doing what you do best, it's a nerve-wracking feeling because it's your family that you're fighting for. So I'll pause there for a second. He's talking about arbitration last year, mm-hmm. right? Where he said it was scary, stressful, resentful, all those things. He's been open about that in the past, including on our show, that it was, you know, without mincing words, this was a very difficult thing for him. And we all kind of knew that he was not going to give the Bruins a team-friendly deal the following year, meaning this summer, yep. because of what he went through last year. But this is where I think it gets extra interesting. He says, quote, for the answer that I'm going to give you this year is that I've educated myself and that I understand the business side of it all. And it's given me a complete new mindset of understanding the business and how to react to it. I understand the cap's going up and where it will be in a few years. I understand my comparables and how I can't ruin the goalie market for other guys that are going to be in my shoes down the line. So this last part about the market, John, is he talking about, like, if I take a team-friendly deal or $8 million, $8.5 million, whatever, does that mean that guys next year, the year after, that are on a similar level are going to be making less because of the standard that I'm setting? What's he talking about?
No, 100%. You want to set the market and you want to take care of players coming after you. So whether it's an Igor Shesterkin or Askarov, who just got traded to the San Jose Sharks, the next up and coming goaltenders, you want to make sure you set that market. So you want to continue to push the money north and get more money into the system and make sure goalies are, you know, rewarded for their play. I think you saw it in the NFL with the running backs, where they took a huge setback in the last 5 to 7 years, the value of running backs has taken a huge hit. And teams now understand, like, well, maybe I don't need a running back. Maybe I don't need to pay him as much as I would a quarterback who's more important. So he sees his value. The goaltender is the most important position, some say, in the NHL. It's very, very important. So he wants to set that bar. Vasilevsky's at 9.5. Hellebuck's at 8.5. Sorokin's at 8.25. He wants to go 10. The last goaltender to sign a $10 million contract was Carey Price and Sergei Bobrovsky. So he wants to push that bar. It's been kind of holding solid for a few years, rightfully so, because the cap's been solid. Nothing's been coming into the system. So the salary cap rising, more money in the system, his importance with the Boston Bruins, his just advantage in negotiations. He holds all the cards in this negotiation. They traded Allmark. They don't really have anybody in the system. He's young. He's proven. He's that guy. So he wants 10-5. He wants 11. He wants to push his market to show, like, okay, we got to get our values up. So good for him. Jake Ottinger sitting there like, okay, yeah, go get that money going. Because Jake Ottinger, I think, is the next big one who's going to sign a huge ticket. And he's going to gain from Jeremy Swayman doing this. But the question I ask is, did the Bruins make a huge mistake? Last year, they go to arbitration. Don Sweeney still unsure about his net. Did he drop the ball? And the answer is obviously yes. But does this fall on Don Sweeney by not having the foresight to sign this guy last year to a $7 million contract? Because if you go to Jeremy Swayman last year and you say, hey, Jeremy, 7 years, $6 million, he's gonna sign it, right? There's a risk for the team. There's a risk for the player. But at this time, at that point, he just won the trophy for the goalies, the Jennings Trophy for the best save percentage. He wasn't the starter. Allmark was still there. You could pave the way for him to become a starter, but they didn't do that. They let him play out the year last year. Everybody knows what he did in the playoffs, and his value goes through the roof. So is this Don Sweeney's fault, team, Tim, that this has come to this point?
I don't know that he would have signed that deal last year, because at the end of the day, the first Florida series, it was a split, and the whole season was a split, but Swayman got game seven. Like, he was given that, and then they negotiate last year. Maybe he would have signed a bridge deal and to avoid arbitration, but I don't think he was going to sign that, because he knew that he was going to take the starting role, which he did this past season. Took the bulk of the starts, still a split by relative standard, but he was the 1A. And then obviously in the playoffs, he just took it and ran with it. And Allmark played pretty well. But I think the part where I point at Sweeney saying this is your fault was the timing of the Allmark trade. I've said this before, like, you traded them at a strange time when for not very much. So it's not like there was an offer on the table that was too good to pass up. And then you, without Swayman being locked up. Now, speaking of Ty Anderson, he did go on the radio yesterday and he said he had an interview with Swayman last week and basically has no indication. It's a matter of when, not if, this gets done. He thinks it'll be done before training camp, before the season starts, maybe into training camp, but before the season for sure. No doubt in his mind that he came away with that. But one of the things he pointed out was, like, Swayman, and this is what Swayman's talking about when understanding the business better than he did last year. The cap's going to go up maybe $4 million next year, maybe another $3, $4 million after that. If he signs for even $8 million in 2 years, year three of the contract, it's going to look like it's way almost embarrassingly underpaid, right? And Swayman and his agent know that. And they're going to, like, we want to be paid based on the cap going up, not just this year, and then the year after that, the year after that, looking forward to like 10% of the salary cap is what he's going to want. And if he signs for 10% right now, that's going to be 7% in 4 years, 2 years, whatever. So the other part that you mentioned when we were texting yesterday is that Swayman's agent, guess who it is? The same guy that had Willie Nylander, I think Torrey Krug, a few other guys who have held out, who have had really brutal negotiations. He drives teams crazy. He's stubborn. He's an agent that's willing to let this go in an ugly direction. So I'm going to believe Ty that this gets done, and it's just a matter of when, not if, and it'll happen before the season starts. That's my hope. And obviously, being a Bruins fan, that's what I want.
Well, it has to get done. You can't start this. Well, I guess you can, but you can't start the season with Korpisalo as your one.
No.
To go from a Linus Allmark and a Jeremy Swayman, two of the best goaltenders in the league, 1-2 punch, to Korpisalo and some AHL guy. Like, that would be the biggest dropping the ball of a GM in history. So they have to get this done. But the bigger issue for the Boston Bruins is, now, if this kid wants 10, I mean, he's got Alan Walsh as his agent. And Alan Walsh, he tells his players it's not Alan Walsh. Okay, it's someone somebody else. Somebody else who says, yeah, hold out. That's fine. The teams will cave. And he has history of that with the players coming out on the top end. He's not going to go to camp. And based on that recent interview he did with that radio show, he's ready. His mindset is set where he will not go to camp. He knows his worth. The team did him wrong last time around. And so he's ready to sit. That's the scary part. He's fully committed to sitting out until they get to his number. This won't be a negotiation. I feel like this is a contract negotiation that's like, Jeremy Swayman, this is my number. Call me when you want to pay me that number. Until then, there's no point in us talking based on what you did last year. And this is a cautionary tale to a lot of GMs. Players now are, I don't want to call them sensitive, but this seems to me that he got his feelings hurt. He is wise to the situation now. And he's not going to deal with it anymore. You hurt my feelings last year. You burned that bridge. Now it's a business. I'm not giving you a team-friendly deal. I'm not going to, you know, take one for the team and help so we can sign another centerman that we need to win a Stanley Cup. No. I'm looking after myself. I'm going to look after my family and future generations. And that's because of what we did last year. You turned this into a business for me. And he even mentioned he's taking classes at Stanford to finish his business degree, a little touting there. And Jeremy Swayman is a smart guy. So that's it. I bet you, Tim, that he slid a number across Don Sweeney, said 10.25. That's my number. 8 years. That's it. Call me when you want to sign. I'll be around. Or you can go with Jonas Korpisalo. See how that works out for you.
Yeah,
I don't see any other option that there is for the Boston Bruins at this point. They're going to lose this negotiation on paper with the number and in the media and with the fan base. They've lost this across the board based on how they've handled this. This is a media nightmare, a PR nightmare for the Boston Bruins right now. And Jeremy Swayman is pouring gasoline on the fire because he's going out and just telling the truth. He's just airing all the, not even dirty laundry. He's just giving people an inside look at what's going on and how he feels massively slighted by this team. And he was in love with them not 2 years ago. He loved the Boston Bruins. They were doing the high fives. He wanted to do everything he can to help this team. He was okay not starting, even though he was a starter on many teams in the NHL. He was taking the back seat to Linus Allmark. He didn't cause a stink. And he continued to work on his game. And now he feels like he should be rewarded. And the Bruins blew it in my eyes. They should have done it last year.
Yeah, but look at the comparables, the goalie contracts that have been signed in recent years. Connor Hellebuyck, 8.5.
Mm-hmm.
Ilya Sorokin, 8.25. Shesterkin is in for a big one, but who's the guy in Saros signed for 5? And then he re-signed for like 7.5 or something like that. So it's,
yep.
I think this number is going to end up being lower than we think. I think Swayman wants 9, and the Bruins want to offer like 7.75, and they settle at 8.5 or 8.8, something like that. I would not be surprised if that was the case, because one of the things, this is what Ty said, if Swayman wanted 10, and the Bruins are under a tremendous amount of pressure right now, why isn't this guy signed? This is your fault. Why aren't you doing this? If it was because of Swayman wanting this huge number, they would leak that. They would let that be known. They would say, listen, we want him, but he's not being reasonable. So I think it's more about the Bruins coming in low than Swayman coming in high, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I do think since he referenced the salary cap rising, he referenced other goaltenders and is setting the market for other goaltenders that are up and coming, that makes me think he wants a big number. I think 9 is a win for the Bruins right now at this point. If they can get him in a 9.5, that's a win. It will not be in the 8s, Tim. I think that ship has sailed. This kid wants 10 plus.
Well, yeah. And then just before we move on, just to point out their cap situation right now, they have about 8.6 in cap space.
Yeah.
They can free up another maybe a million in just a couple of waiver moves and some guys that will sign two ways or whatever. But there's not a lot of room here. Like there's not a lot of, you can't sign 9.5 unless you get rid of some salary. So,
again, yeah, going back to the interview, do you think Swayman cares? He said, for the answer I'm giving you this year, I've educated myself and I understand the business side of it all. And it's given me a complete new mindset of understanding the business and how to react to it. I understand the cap is going up and where it will be in years. I understand my comparables and how I can't ruin the goalie market for other guys that are going to be in my shoes down the line. Does that sound like a guy who's going to just, you know what? I'll take a million less. I get it. Our salary cap's a little bit tight. I'll take eight, you guys. No, he could care less about the salary cap. He could care less about guys having to be put on waivers or traded. It's just because they burned him last year. He's going to get his value.
Have you ever had a teammate hold out? And the reason I'm asking is because I'm wondering, does the guys get it? Like, they want their buddies to be paid. They understand that, like, the business side of it. But is there any part of the teammates that are like, dude, what are you doing? We need you. Like, no, get it together, man.
This is a new phenomenon, a relatively new one in the last 10 years that has come around where players just hold out. It's unheard of in hockey. I think it's slowly starting to be more common, but other sports do it all the time. Hockey never did that. I never had someone hold out in the camp. I've had maybe like ELC guys not sign the contract, but even still, they signed it because it was just set. But no, this is something new. Good for Jeremy Swayman. I'm usually on the team side in a lot of these things, but I feel like the team blew it. They really just dropped the ball on this. They should have signed him. They should have had some foresight to say, this kid's good. He's our future. Let's wrap him up to a long-term, lower money deal. And lower money is still $6, $7 million. They could have made that work last year, move some pieces around. But no, now they're going to pay him $10.5 million. And they're $10.5 million, and they're going to have to move an Andrew Peak or something to make it work. It's just the way of business. All right. Anything else on this, Tim?
No, I think it's a good transition to which side you're taking on the team versus the player. There was a trade last week. Rutger McGrody, who came out a few weeks ago saying he was not going to play for Winnipeg, he was not going to report to camp, just needed to be moved. He was traded to Pittsburgh in exchange for Braden Jaeger. So they were both a 14th overall pick, 1 year apart, both on their ELCs, both not having NHL experience yet. I think pretty fair value for the Jets, given the situation. But Rutger seems to be the higher upside player. He had 91 points in 75 games at U of M. He played with Fantilli. We mentioned him the other day. But here's where it gets interesting. Cheval Dayoff, the GM of Winnipeg, was unable to ever get a straight answer from McGrody on why he wanted to leave. He said he was talking to the agent, talking about the combine back in June, and the agent said, quote, he just didn't feel right. He didn't have a reason. He said, I went through a litany of questions to the agent to see, was it player development? Was it that we didn't burn a year of his contract? He said, no. He said, it just didn't feel right. It started at development camp and just didn't feel right. Double Dayoff even said, I met with Rutger face-to-face several days later, and that was the same response as well. He said that when he got to camp, he put the jersey on, it became real, and just did not feel right at the time. That's all they're saying. John, what's going on with this kid, and what do you think about it?
If you want me to be honest and frank, a lot of people won't. Well, I guess a lot of people in Winnipeg don't like this, but he doesn't like Winnipeg, the city. I think that's the easy answer, right? The team's good. The team's very good. They have a chance to win the Stanley Cup every year. They're always in the contention. They have a good team, good core. And I know it's very just kind of black and white, but who wants to play in Winnipeg? I think that's it. He got drafted by Winnipeg. He went for a visit. He did the drive around town, see the rink, see the facilities. He's used to playing at the U of M, Yost Arena, one of, if not, the most prestigious college arenas in the country. Their facilities are way better than many NHL facilities. So if you go from that for the last 2 years, you're a freshman, you're a sophomore, you're having a good time playing hockey, you're successful, your team's outrageously good. You got Fantilli, you got Nazer from Chicago, like you're lighting it up. You get drafted, fantastic. You go to the NHL facility and it's like a one or two or three steps back. Is that fun? Is that something you want? And then you have to live in Winnipeg? No offense on Winnipeg, but everybody knows it there. It's called Winterpeg, super cold. There's not a lot to do there. It's just, there's no easy way to get there. And this is why. So he went there and he said, I'm good. Players have a little bit of power. And he knows if he just holds out for a few years, he will be a free agent. He can sign anywhere. He has, I think, 3 years. And he has a little bit of leverage because the U of M is not a bad place to live. Go there, get better, win a national championship, have some fun, get a degree. That's not a bad option knowing that there's millions of dollars waiting for you and you could just come out and pick a team of your choice. So when a player has that leverage, he could say, much like Jeremy Swayman, he's like, no thanks. Trade me. I'm not playing there. I don't want to play there. There's a lot of feelings involved. There's a lot of, this doesn't make me feel good, which I don't really care for. You got drafted. You should honor that draft. But players have that leverage now.
So that's my first question. Should McGrody have at least explained himself? Does he owe an explanation to the team? They I don't say wasted, but maybe you could say it is. But they spent a first-round pick on him, 14th overall. Does he owe them at least a reason why he wants to? Because he's not obligated. He has the right to refuse. But doesn't he owe them an explanation?
Well, I think the explanation is he doesn't like the city. You know, and you don't know that before you get drafted. You don't go and visit each city before the draft. And he's just once I went to development camp in Winnipeg, it became real. It's like this real, real crappy. Like this city stinks. So I think it started to sink in. Man, this could be my city for the next 7 years. They own my rights for a long time. You know, I have my ELC. They have me until I'm 25. Do I want to do this when I still have an iota amount of control over where I end up? It's not popular. It's not conventional, but I still can control where I go until I sign that contract. Once I sign that contract, I have no control. And he's exercising that. He said, I'm not going there.
So when you look at this situation, Cutter Gauthier, who didn't want to play for Philly, right? Mm-hmm. Two kids that, and you said multiple times, playing in the NHL is a privilege. It's not a right. You don't question it. You advocate for yourself where necessary, but you're picking and choosing and stuff. That's part of the business. That's not within your right. And 5 years ago, I think you would have said, like, suck it up. Like, you have a chance to play your dream. Mm-hmm. Why are you coming down on the side of the players now?
I just think I'm evolving. Sign of the times. Where, and the Winnipeg still has the right to say, okay, we're not going to trade you. You can stay in the NCAA for a long time and that's it. But it's just the way things are going. Players are starting to exercise their rights a little bit. And it is what it is. This will make drafting tricky now, because you have to make sure that player is committed to going to play in that city. And it doesn't affect big cities. This won't affect Chicago and Toronto and Tampa and Dallas, like really, really great cities to play in. But for the New Jerseys, the New York Islanders, the Buffaloes, the Winnipegs, you have to ask those questions now. Like, if I have a lottery pick or a top 10 pick or top whatever, first round pick, if I pick you, will you come? Like, isn't that crazy? If I draft you in the first round, will you come to play in my city? Because players now, they know their worth and they just say, no, I'm okay. Unless hockey closes that loop. And they say, no, once you're drafted, you're that team's property forever. You can't wait it out and then become a UFA. That might be a topic of conversation in the next round of negotiations. So, yeah, it's not like the Winnipeg Jets got fleeced. This kid they're picking up, Jagr, is good. Like, he's really, really good. I don't think he's Rutger McGrody good. But, yeah, it's just too bad. Shovel day off. Stinks. It's like, all right, let's sign. No. No, thanks. I'm not going to Winnipeg. It's just and then imagine how easy it is to negotiate if you're Julian Breezeball from Tampa Bay. It's like, hey, you want to come to Tampa? We got great facilities right by the water. We've won 2 Stanley Cups in the last so many years. We're always a contender. No state tax. You get to play with all these great players. Because the same amount of players are in Winnipeg to a different extent. Vasilevsky, you got Hellebuck. You got Scheifele. You got this guy. You got Morrissey. You got Hedman. Like, you have good players in Winnipeg. It's just Winnipeg. It's just 1,000 miles away to the north.
Is Winnipeg the city in Canada, like, even to Canadians, that's the place they don't want to be? Does that have that reputation?
Like, for the big cities.
Yeah,
because there's no big cities, and I'm going to insult some people, but, like, my mom's from Saskatchewan. There's no real big cities in Saskatchewan. There's Regina and Saskatoon, but I wouldn't consider them a big city. Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, and then you jump to Winnipeg. So Winnipeg's, that's the worst, unfortunately.
Cool.
Well, I'm glad the situation's done. All right, moving on to more player drama, Tim. Who do we got next?
Yeah, it's full of dramas. This one kind of came out of nowhere. With the Flyers last week, placed forward Ryan Johansson on unconditional waivers for the purpose of terminating his contract due to a material breach. Let's pause there for a second. I don't speak the legalese. I don't know if you do. Do you know what material breach means? Is that breach of contract?
Yeah, so he did something that breached his contract, whether, and this was, I had this instance, and there's material breach is a broad range, whether he said something, whether he did something. Like I played with James Shepard in Minnesota. He went four-wheeling and hurt himself. So that was a material breach of contract where there is something written and you broke it. And every, like, players knew that you weren't allowed to go jet skiing. You weren't allowed to go downhill skiing. You weren't allowed to go four wheeling. All of this is in the player's contract, things you can't do to jeopardize your health. Every break, like we went skiing and I was in Chicago, like me and Seabrook and Turco and Jake Dowell and a couple other guys. If we would have gotten hurt, they could have like terminated our contract. If you go to the beach and you go surfing or kayaking, that's material breach of contract. You can't do any of that. So that's one end of it. And there's other ends where you can't say things. Like if you go on a podcast, you can't hide injuries. You can't do these, anything. So I don't know what the breach is, but it's a huge, just laundry list of things you can't do. So I'm guessing something falls in that range.
So then Johansson's agent replied, like published a statement later that night or the next day saying it's a big like PR official legalese document that said, that Johansson, quote unquote, has a severe hockey injury that requires extensive surgery, which has been scheduled. So basically at this point, you're thinking, okay, the Flyers think that he's faking it, doesn't want to play, or that he's milking it, or that he didn't do the right things about his injury, didn't hold up his deal of whether it's training or recuperating or getting surgery or whatever. And he said, the agent said that Johansson has worked in good faith with the Flyers. But the Flyers still terminated this contract. So Johansson has 60 days to decide whether he wants to file a grievance. And he's going to work with the NHLPA on this, who have already obviously published a statement saying they're going to advocate for him and whatever. That's their obligation. The Flyers aren't commenting back, but they have made it clear that they will present their case. So this stuff is going to come out about this if Johansson wants to protest this, which I think he's going to. It might take a few more weeks, yeah, because he has 60 days. There's only been about 7, but this could get really juicy and interesting. Hopefully not ugly, but I don't think there's a lot of hockeyness to this. This seems like interpersonal drama.
Well, you notice the agent said a hockey injury. So I think this falls under the same category as the James Shepard. And you hear it from time to time. Players will get hurt in the offseason or they'll get hurt doing something non-hockey related and they'll go to the rink and they'll just get an injury. Whether you break your hand, you break your wrist, you hurt your knee, you hide it until you get to the rink, you throw the pads on, and all of a sudden you start skating. You go, oh, my ACL. Oh, my finger's broke. Oh, my wrist is broke. Shoulder's bad. It happened on the ice. You can't terminate my contract.
That story was told on our show with Prust when they were playing hoops at the NBA, the practice facility, and Brian Boyle rolled his ankle.
Yeah.
And the next morning he skated long enough to say that he rolled it at practice. I think it was happens. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but.
It happens a lot where players hurt themselves and they have to go and just, and it doesn't always have to be on like an NHL rink. You have to do it either training for the season or during the season at the facilities. So if it's in the summer and you're playing hoops or you're playing volleyball or whatever, and you hurt yourself, you wait to go to the rink and you go, I was doing battle drills and I hurt myself, because teams are up to they know what's going on. So this is what happened here. And the agent's very smart with his wording. He says he has a severe hockey injury that requires extensive surgery. So he blew his knee out doing something. The Flyers think it was not hockey related. And Johansson's like, no, it was hockey related. Pay me my contract. You owe me $4 million. And the Flyers say no. And so that's what and I don't know. I'm just guessing. But that's what I think is happening here. And I think this is very rare for a team to, you know, take a stand like this, that they know. That they know what he was doing, whether like James Shepard, I didn't finish that story. He was four wheeling, flipped the four wheeler, blew his knee right out. And he was a first rounder and he was coming into off of his ELC. I think he was in his third year. And so he hadn't reached his potential. And the Minnesota Wild said, done. We don't want you. And they let him walk. They said, we're not paying you this year. Take care. Comb your hair. We're done. And that was a way for them to get out of this contract. They drafted him, I think 16th or 26th overall, something like that. And they were done. They had the out. He hurt himself. They did not pay for any of the surgery. They said that was not hockey related. See you later. Greasy move, like a really, really, you know, business-like move. But teams have that ability. If I would have been hurt skiing when we went to Colorado, Blackhawks could have easily said, no, you're done. Sorry. So I think that's what happened here. The Flyers know, or else they wouldn't even started this process. They have to have some pretty concrete evidence in order to start this process.
And I'm sure there's like a subjectivity to it too, where like if Patrick Sharp had gotten hurt while skiing, he might be like, we are pissed. We're having a conversation behind closed doors, but we're going to keep you around and figure this out. Where if you had done it, they'd be like, okay, see ya.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Yeah. Big mistake. And yeah. Ryan Johansson, 32 years old, they had to pick him up in a contract just to make something happen. But he's owed $4 million. He still has $4 million paid from the last team who bought him. I think the Colorado Avalanche are paying some of that. Maybe the Nashville Predators are picking up some of that tab. But like, he is not a player they want on their roster. He's just a guy filling space, and he makes $4 million. So if I'm Danny Breer, if I'm the Philadelphia Flyers, and I have this opportunity, yeah, free up $4 million bucks. Like, let's go. You're already up against the cap in Philadelphia. You're already a million over. And so this helps them out really, really well. So I don't know. We'll see how this works out. But usually this takes a long time to go to trial, go to court. Maybe they settle. I don't know. But $4 million, it's this whole contract. So this does affect other teams. So if he's in breach of contract, the other teams who are on the hook for that $4 million, they all of a sudden get that lifted off their books. And so the Nashville Predators will be just, they won't have to pay him that $4 million this year. So it's a huge deal for a lot of teams. And all of a sudden, Nashville, if they get that extra money, like, oh, jackpot. Thank you very much, Philadelphia Flyers.
They got out from under him. They got out from McDonough. And they also have three first-round picks, I think, in addition to the signings they made for next year. So they're going to be a good team and buyers. They're going to have the cap space to make something happen, which will be fun to watch.
They will be. Oh, let's get some quick hits in here, Tim.
Yeah, we talked about Matty Beniers. He signed a 7 years, just over $7 million per. I think it's a great signing. I think it's going to be one of those ones that in a couple of years you look back and like, man, what a steal. Similar to like maybe a Jack Hughes or something, that it's like he should have been making a lot more. So I think it's a good deal. But certainly a little bit to a risk where he was great his rookie year, came down a little bit ever since, similar to a Barzal. Barzal had, 82 points his first year and hasn't done 60 since. So, what do you thought about this one?
I think it's a good signing. But again, does he live up to it? I think it's a solid number. It's not an outrageous number that's going to hurt this team moving forward. But he was injured last year. Matty Beniers played good, you know, the last two seasons as a rookie and a sophomore. So we'll see how it pans out. But I misread that. His sophomore year was his really good year. And then last year he had an okay year, 37-57. But you like this kid. I'm not as high as him as you are. I just think $7 million is a going right now for a solid first, second line player, as crazy as that sounds, moving forward. This will be a good contract for the Seattle Kraken, and I think it's good to lock him up. But I'm not as high on him as you are. I don't think he has that it factor. But I haven't watched him much. I'll be honest. I haven't watched many Seattle Kraken games, but good for them. Finally, you know, adding some big-name players to this team. Not adding, but holding on to, I should say.
The American Hockey League the other day announced that it has officially mandated cut-resistant neck protection for all players and all on-ice officials starting this season. Is that good news?
I don't care. Yeah, fine. Neck guards. I think it should be, I don't know, leave it up to the players. I still think you shouldn't have to wear a visor, but that's just me. I think a player should have the say on what they wear and what they don't wear. If you want to go out there with no bucket on, good for you. You're going to smash your head in. You know, you can make that decision. So it's good. If you're not going to cut your neck, that's fine. I don't care.
Okay. The last thing here, Askarov, the goalie, was traded from Nashville to San Jose Sharks, signed a 2-year deal worth $2 million per. They now have their goalie of the future. They have their forwards of the future. They have their D of the future. They're actually the number one rated prospect pool in the league, which is just amazing when you talk about, like, we talked for years and years about how they were stuck in no man's land. There was no path to getting better. They finally, one by one, get out of these contracts. Guys retire, guys move. There's a couple more that are expiring next year, and they will be free. I think Mike Greer's done a great job with the draft, with tanking, with asset management, and bringing in Askarov. So it's really exciting for San Jose and your former team to have finally a path forward.
Yeah, I think they've done a really good job of transitioning. I think you nailed it. Even you get Macklin Celebrini this year with the number overall pick. You have some good young players. Fabian Zetterlund's playing great for them. You got Will Smith coming in this season, going to make his debut with Celebrini. They're slowly but surely, Tim. And they added some good pieces this year in free agency. Bring back Barkley Gaudreau, Stanley Cup champion, one of those sandpaper type guys who are really good. Bring in Tyler Toffoli to mentor these guys. They have a lot of question marks still. The two holdouts right now are Logan Couture and Mark-Edward Vlasic. They each have, Vlasic has 2 years left on his deal and Cooch has three. They make 8 and 7 respectively. So if they can figure out those two guys, whether it's trading Cooch for nothing, just letting him walk, and then just buying out Mark Edward Vlasic, they already have $10 million in cap space. You get those two gone, $25 million. The cap raises. All of a sudden, you're looking at $30 million you can spend, not to mention losing Granlund and stuff. So this team has slowly but surely positioned themselves to be a really, really good contender in the West. So I don't know. It's kind of fun. They did it really, really smart. They didn't reach. They didn't try to go out there and, you know, change it overnight. They had a couple lean years where they were losing. Get rid of Burns. Get rid of Hurdle. Get rid of Timo Meier. Get rid of all these big contracts. And all of a sudden, look out for the Sharks. It's very exciting. Yeah, I like that they're starting to finally right the ship and start to go north instead of south.
Well, and I think getting out of the Erik Karlsson contract, retaining only 1.5, that's the mystery one. Not the mystery, but the amazing one. He was paid 11.5. They're only in the books for $1.5 million. So that's just astounding. And speaking of Zetterlund, you mentioned him. We are talking to him about an interview next week, which will be a lot of fun.
Amazing.
Fabian Zetterlund, nice young up-and-coming player for the Sharks. Nice kid. So hopefully we'll have him on the show on Tuesday.
All right. Well, that sounds nice, everybody. I will talk to you then, Tim. I appreciate everybody joining and listening to the show. Thanks for the support. Hey, we'll talk to everybody next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.